to the audio event of the century, featuring two lifelong best friends. We love the Leafs. We love each other. But most of all, we love William Nylander. Welcome to the Buds All Day.
Hello and welcome to the Buds All Day podcast. I'm Sats Mundeen, joined by Noah Banks.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going good if you're a Leaf fan. I know we just lost to the Blackhawks tonight, but Kyle Dubas swung arguably his biggest trade as the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and that is why we have made our way back to the podcasting platform, Noah. So before we even get into anything, let's just get our initial thoughts right away. Noah Lachari and Ryan O'Reilly are Toronto Maple Leafs. How do you feel about that?
I'm pretty fired up. It's hard not to be excited around Leafland right now. They came out, they swung big. Kyle Dubas, he lied to our faces. He lied to the media. He took all his futures and said, I need a Ryan O'Reilly in my life. And it's just crazy. You see him in the jersey. You watch that Leaf Blueprint video. It's unbelievable to think we got this guy. Like, I can't be more excited right now.
It kind of takes me back to when we first got John Tavares, when everybody was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this guy's a Leaf. Like, I've seen so much of that lately, and it's true. Like, it's still taking some getting used to seeing him playing for the Leafs.
Well, yeah, like, even tonight, I'm watching him just, like, make good plays in the corner and just, like, getting the puck to Tavares, and you're like, man, like, I can't believe this guy's a Leaf. It's been a whirlwind of a 24, 36 hours just getting this guy in a Leafs jersey, watching him play his first two games. And like, you just, it's exciting to be a Leafs fan right now. So
you love the hashtag passion of O'Reilly and Achari coming the same day to come play that game against the Habs last night. Then you got Achari coming in, scoring a goal today. Like, he's definitely something we can't forget about this deal. So I think the first way I want to do it is kind of talk about the cost of the deal, then kind of get maybe where we think he'll fit, how we think it'll end up being looking in the playoffs. Is he washed? All those types of things. So we'll do a full coverage on the deal itself. So first off, let's just talk about what we did give up for him. So we got O'Reilly retained at 75%. So he's only costing about $1.8 million. And then we got Noah Lachari in the deal as well, who is also an unrestricted free agent. We got Josh Pillar, who he's like a 21-year-old OHLer. He's been a point-of-game guy, but he's probably not too much. Probably just a contract to fill the slot. So we get O'Reilly and Lachari, basically, a couple of rentals. We gave up this year's first, next year's second, and then Ottawa's third rounder this year. So basically a second rounder, knowing how they play. And then a fourth rounder, as well as Abramov and Gaudette. So I think those last two are kind of just contract spot fillers. I didn't have much hope for Abramov. So you're basically giving up a first, second, third, and fourth for these two. So what are your thoughts on the cost? Do you think it was the right deal? Do you think we underpaid, we overpaid? How do you feel about Dubas' price?
I think the trade lies to us a little bit. You're thinking, oh, we gave up four picks for these two guys. But really, if you kind of think about it, it's like a first for O'Reilly, a second for Achari, and then it's like a third for the Blues to retain, and then a fourth for Minnesota to retain. So when you kind of think about it like that, I'm looking at it like, oh, yeah, we gave up a first for O'Reilly, and then it was just picks for the other parts of it. So I don't think about it as much. It doesn't jump off the page as much of this huge payment we had to pay. But just, you get a guy like Ryan O'Reilly, you can't argue he's got the Conn Smythe, he's got the Stanley Cup, he's got the Selke, and you just add him to a lineup that already is top three, top five in the NHL on any given night. It's hard to argue that this is a bad deal for the Leafs. Plays all three positions. He can do literally anything you need from him. It's hard to say that this was a bad trade.
Yeah. And a lot of people have been saying kind of, oh, the Leafs are finally all in now. Dubas is all in. But you're right. The package they paid wasn't that crazy, especially when you know that first rounder, even if we get bumped in the first round like we annually do, that first rounder is still going to be 24th, 25th at best for St. Louis. So we know how those picks go. They're not really much more valuable than second rounders. So I agree with you that the price really wasn't high. We kept Matt Nyes, we kept Robertson, we kept Niemela, all these prospects, which at this point of the building process for the Leafs, I feel like the prospects are way more important because they're guys who are going to contribute next year, Nyes maybe even as quickly as this year. So we're not losing anything from this year from the team, not losing anything from next year. And we're getting a guy who, like you said, he fills so many holes for us. Like, sure, we would love to get Timo Meier get that, you know, elite winger. But honestly, you could make an argument that these guys are providing a similar amount of value, and that maybe even O'Reilly's providing more because of that versatility he can play. I think he really injury proofs us now, because if one of Matthews or Tavares goes down, fine, slide O'Reilly into the second line center, or, you know, he already is with Tavares playing the wing, whatever you might say. Now, if we get any of our top five forwards injured, I feel a lot better about it. Any injury on defense, I feel like we're pretty much okay there. Maybe we want to add another depth piece, but Connor Timmins isn't a bad sixth defenseman to have. And then in net, we're seeing it right now. Matt Murray's injured and Ilya Samsonov's carrying the load. So I feel like this is the deepest Leafs team we've had in a while. And getting a guy like O'Reilly who can just fill so many holes is, it makes me feel amazing about this team.
Yeah, it's hard not to get jacked up about the playoffs and thinking about how we're going to do after this trade. It is nice, as we said earlier, that to see Dubas say, hey, I agree with these guys. This is the team to go all in on, and just believing in them. And he's not left us with this feeling of, oh, we should have done this or we should have done that. He makes the big trade. He gets the big player. And like you said, I love O'Reilly's versatility. We're seeing it now. He's playing in the top six. You're looking at one of, if not the deepest and best top six in the NHL, or maybe next game he's playing on the third line and he's slotted in there. And now you have a formidable top nine that can match up against anybody. It's just the versatility it brings to the lineup, the pedigree it brings to the lineup, the leadership. It checks off so many boxes that I feel like as other players, they might've been better on paper. This fills so many boxes. It's hard not to say, this was probably the best option to get. And then also to get Achari in the deal. Just unbelievable asset management by Dubas.
Yeah, he took what I think was probably our biggest weakness in the bottom six. It's been killer every year. Like, they don't contribute in the playoffs. They never score. It's always got to be the big four. Now with O'Reilly, that really changes things. And Achari. Achari scored his 11th goal of the year tonight. So that's some scoring in the bottom six. And then Ryan O'Reilly, even if he's playing in the top six, he's still pushing another guy down. So you're getting Cale Järnkrok on that third line. And all of a sudden, the bottom six, if you add Järnkrok and Achari to what was there before, that's not a bad bottom six at all. And if you add Ryan O'Reilly there and we put Järnkrok back the way he was playing a month or two ago, all of a sudden that bottom six is looking very much like the one the Tampa Bay Lightning had when they had that awesome line before they got pillaged by Seattle. So that kind of brings me to my next question for you about, where do you think O'Reilly is going to play? Like, do you want him to continue playing on this second line to try to create basically two first lines like the Leafs have been kind of billed as since we signed John Tavares? Or do you think we should go for that Tampa model like when they had Yanni Gord and Cirelli and those guys on the third line and just kind of try to spread some depth through the lineup? What do you think of Keith's decision so far, and how do you think it'll end up in the playoffs?
I really like it for the first couple games, maybe the first week or two. You know, Ryan O'Reilly's coming in here. He's had a bit of a down year, and then he gets to come in here, play with two absolute studs and on a line with John Tavares and Mitch Marner. He can throw up a few points, but I think that the strength would be by putting him to the third line and creating an incredible top six. You get this sweet matchup line with Ryan O'Reilly, and he's really able to drive the line. I know a lot of people were talking about the 2LW. I was a part of that group. And you kind of look at Järnkrok's stats when he's playing with that. As soon as he got put with Tavares, I think he had something like 7 goals, 17 points in like 23 games, which I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was like a 26 goal, some like X amount of point pace when he was put on that line. So he's fine there. And then you just get Ryan O'Reilly to just carry that line on the third line. I think that's the ideal. But I understand why they're doing it for right now in that second line stacked.
Yeah, you were wondering how Järnkrok looked on that line. Like, just from an advanced numbers perspective, they played 176 minutes together and they had a 55% expected goals. Like, that's elite level territory right there. So especially for a second line, like, that's better numbers than, Kerfoot, Willie, Tavares was putting up for the longest time there. Or even Kerfoot, Tavares, Marner. So I think it is a line that could be really effective. So I'm kind of with you. I think it's a good idea right now to start him with Tavares, because I think it would be foolish not to at least try it at some point in the year to see, you know, if things are going poorly late in the game and we need to get some offense, we need to have them have some chemistry together. But I'm with you. I think our best look is if we can get Yarncroc to keep playing at the same level he was and then have O'Reilly supercharge a third line, like how is a team like Tampa, who we know we're going to face, how are they supposed to match up with that?
And I think that's the point, that they really aren't. I had a tweet out earlier today just saying like, oh, you always hear about Tampa has this, Tampa has that. How's Toronto going to compete? Well, Ryan O'Reilly's on our third line. He's a Stanley Cup champion. He was the best player on his team when they won the Stanley Cup. And now he's arguably the fifth most important player on the Leafs on any given night. So, like, your move, Tampa. It's unbelievable we have him. And I'm really excited to kind of see how this works more long term. And it's been a great few two games so far into the Ryan O'Reilly experiment. And I'm getting pretty excited thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's probably, given the cost and the fit and everything, I don't think there was a better fit out there for the Leafs than O'Reilly. And you got to also tip your cap to the fact that he is from Toronto, so you know he's pumped up to be here. I know people said that with Nick Foligno, but it just feels a little different this time, and we're not trading for a crippled old man. We're trading for a guy who's 32, and like you said, won a Conn Smythe trophy less than 4 years ago. Like, that's not a long time, especially when he's only 32 now. It's not like he's 36 or anything like that. So the foot injury that he had doesn't really scare me, because bones are a lot different than the back injury that Nick Foligno had. So, yeah, I think he's going to turn it up a notch. I think we've seen that with other guys too, like Patrick Kane on Chicago. Like, some of these guys that are playing for just dog shit teams, when they come to a good team, they're revitalized. They're trying a lot harder. They have better teammates. I think we're going to see a really special version of Ryan O'Reilly. I would go so far as to say he might even be a more key contributor than John Tavares on this playoff run.
Yeah, there's got to be some crazy motivation coming from him. Like, he's gone from, like you said, just games mean nothing on St. Louis this year. They're kind of towards they're outside the playoffs all year. And then he comes to Toronto, and you could just see it in that. I don't know if you watched that Leaf Blueprint video last night, but you just, the excitement that he had in his voice. He had this big post-game speech talking about how happy he and Achari were to be on the Leafs, and just that this is a special team, and he's just jazzed to be a part of it. So I'm really curious to see how it kind of goes and how he cements himself into being a Leaf in week two, week three, and kind of the look that he gives. But it's just, early returns are really, really exciting me with how awesome that this marriage might end up being.
Yeah, considering that he and Achari are both coming, like we said, probably off very little sleep, no practices with the team, I think it's just going to get that much better as we go on here. So I am curious to see what Keith does after a couple practices, if he does for the next game decide to try him on that third line, because Keith said it himself, like, he was up all night, he couldn't sleep because he was thinking of all the line combinations, all the things that he could do. Like, Dubas has really given Keith infinite options here. Like, there's nothing that he can't do. Like, the lines tonight, you're still running out there a third line with O'Reilly up there. You're still having a third line of Engvall, Kampf, and Yarncroc. Like, that's a really good kind of shutdown type of line, like we saw with Mikheyev and Yarncroc's place last year. Like, they're not going to give up much. So I could see why you'd be somewhat comfortable with that third line. And then having, we saw it, Kampf and Achari combining for a goal tonight. Like, that third line, or sorry, that fourth line of Achari, Kerfoot, and Aston Reese, like, they can, you know, they can contribute too. So it's just the look of this forward group is totally different. And you said earlier that they were kind of arguably among the best top six. I don't even think it's arguable at this point. I think top six, top 12, no team is competing with our forwards.
And I think a big part of that strength too isn't just that they're the best, it's that there's so much versatility. And I feel like with a lot of teams, we're talking about, oh yeah, this is what the top six is going to be, and this is what the top nine is going to be, and this is kind of the look that they have. And you and I have been sitting here talking for about 15 minutes now, and you and I have no idea what they're going to look like, because there's so many different variables and so many different possibilities they could roll out. And at a moment's notice, Keith could just say the word and change the entire complexion of the Leafs forward group and bring on a whole new light. And John Cooper sitting on the other bench going, oh my goodness, I don't know what to do now. So, like, this whole idea of bringing in Ryan O'Reilly and Nola Chari, and just the way that it changes this whole forward group and the whole complexion of the team. Like, we've been talking about it all day, but it's hard not to be excited about how this group's going to do in the future.
Yeah, and it's almost silly to even speculate about what lines will be, because we know Keith loves putting them in a blender. Like, you know, he'll do his classic Matthews Tavares Marner shifts out there, or maybe Matthews Tavares or Matthews Willie Marner, something like that. And it's that much nicer now when he does those shifts, he can have the fourth guy playing with Ryan O'Reilly instead. So the next shift, it's not Willie, you know, with Kerfoot and Yarncroc, it's Willie with Yarncroc and O'Reilly. Like, it's, there's just so many moves. And then O'Reilly, like, if you're losing, again, you slide him up with Tavares. If you're winning late in the game, maybe you put him with Kampf and Engvall and you just go super shutdown. Like, he's such a good two-way player. It's, I, as you can tell, I'm giddy. I'll say it now. The Toronto Maple Leafs are winning the cup.
Yeah, like, they have to be. They're the best team ever, right? So it's
I'm just serious, Noah. You heard me predict last year. I said Lightning in six. Not anymore.
I'm with you, man. I think this is the year. You're looking at this team, and it's going to be hard to beat them in a seven-game series, especially you've had a top three, top five team all year, and then you go and you had a guy who was the number one player on a Stanley Cup winning team only a few years ago. It's hard not to look at this team and think about how scary they're going to be. And I do think we overrate that a little bit by the day-to-day and seeing this team every day, but this is a scary team. And if I'm Tampa Bay and I'm Julian Brisebois, I'm looking at this team going like, man, I don't like that Ryan O'Reilly trade if I'm Tampa at all.
No, yesterday was a miserable day to be a Lightning fan. And that kind of takes me to my, like, wondering, like, what is Tampa going to do? I haven't looked at their cap sheet. I haven't been as involved with all this kind of stuff and with Twitter this year, so I don't really know what they're dealing with, but I know they were in a cap crunch in the offseason. Like, we pushed them to seven games last year, and they lost Palat and they lost a McDonough. So they lost a good top six winger, a good top four D. And meanwhile, we lost last year's Muzzin, but like Sandin, Liljegren, these guys are all quite a bit better this year. And then you're adding Ryan O'Reilly into that mix. I'm thinking that turns the tide into our favor. But do you think Tampa Bay is going to make a move now to try to match this?
I think Tampa's a little scared that when they go, they eventually get their 5-on-3 with a game or two left in the series, that it's not going to be David Kampf out there anymore. Now it's Ryan O'Reilly. So I think they're probably a little nervous. And I think they want to make a move, but when you look at it, they don't have really any assets. They're down their firsts in the next 2 years. I think they've just got one or two seconds. Like, they don't have a ton of like really high end prospects coming up except like one guy. Like, I kind of look at them and I'm thinking like, how could they respond without like unloading their entire future on this year? And I just don't think that makes sense for them after kind of going all in last year. So I think that John Cooper and Julian Brisebois are sitting there going like, man, we're going to need a miracle, kind of like they got last year against this Leafs team, because it looks like the Leafs are building to beat Tampa and building to beat Boston, and I don't even think they're done. So it's a bad day to be a Bruins fan. It's a bad day to be a Lightning fan.
Yeah, like, you look at the Lightning. I'm on their cap friendly right now. They only have $700,000 in cap space. They do not have this year's or next year's first round pick. Like, if they're trading for something, they don't have a prospect pool that you can really be impressed by. So they're going to have to trade their 2025 first round pick. And with an aging team like that, that's a huge risk, because that could be a very high pick if they fall off quickly, as they very well could. Like Stamkos, Kucherov, Hedman, Vasilevskiy, these guys are all aging. So it's going to be really, really hard for them to make a move. Now, you kind of took me into my next question. Comfortably Numb on Twitter did ask us, what are your opinions on Dubas' next move? Like, do you expect him to make one? Do you want him to make one? What are you hoping for?
Well, I'm looking at the O'Reilly retention and to get that third team in there. And I think the Leafs have a few million dollars in cap space with Murray on IR right on LTIR right now. And I'm looking at this Leafs forward core, and you've got Kerfoot on the fourth line with this $3.5 million. And it's hard not to imagine some sort of move coming here. Knowing Kyle Dubas, and he's always willing to steal the show, and the Leafs have like 10 assistant GMs and they're calling on every single player every single day, I feel like it's hard to imagine the Leafs and Kyle Dubas saying, oh yeah, like, we're done. I'm not going to make one trade in the next 2 weeks. I can't see that happening. There was so much talk about adding a defenseman this year after Muzzin went down. There's been so much talk about the Leafs connected to like 40 different guys. I feel like you make the Ryan O'Reilly trade, but there's still a little bit more, I think, that they're going to get done. And they have the cap space to do that if they work it around enough. So I feel like there has to be another move, or there's going to be another move, whether that's something like Frank Vetrano for a fourth last year that New York did, something really minor to just like add a little bit extra, or that's another bigger deal. I think there's got to be something happening.
Yeah, I definitely don't think Dubas is done. I think he's put himself in great position where he's not going to get bent over by another GM. Like Tampa, Boston, now the clock's kind of ticking on them like to make a move. The other teams know they're desperate. They might want to make an addition, whereas Dubas, he's made his big move, so he can sit back, and if he does nothing, I don't think anybody's really going to be that mad. So, yeah, I think exactly what you're thinking. If they're going to make a deal, it's probably going to be something like a fourth for maybe a depth defenseman, maybe another depth forward, something like that, or maybe they do get busy and they use Kerfoot's salary. I was looking at the cap friendly. Don't quote me on this, but I did the interactive GM thing, and it looks like when they bring Murray back and they go down to 12 forward, 7D, so basically a general roster, they'd have about 200,000 in cap space. So, if they trade Kerfoot, that's 3.5. So they're looking, they could add probably about a $7 million player if they were to trade Kerfoot the other way. My guess, though, is just given the whole Kerfoot saga over the years, is that man is not going anywhere. He's probably going to sign an extension, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I think I'm being hopefully optimistic, but I was talking to someone today and I'm trying to figure out where Kerfoot's going to play. I don't think he's good enough to play in this new look top six. I feel like putting him on the third line with O'Reilly would be an insult to O'Reilly, because I feel like O'Reilly would thrive with maybe because he's been more of a defensive pass first kind of guy. And so having Kerfoot, who's also more pass first, and then Engvall, who I would say is more of a shooter, having the three of them together, I don't know if I like love it so much. And so the idea with moving Kerfoot would be to basically find Kerfoot 2.0, but maybe as more of a shooter, and like his penalty killing and versatility kind of gets taken away with Achari and O'Reilly. But like, as you said, Kerfoot being a Leaf is inevitable. It's always going to happen until the day he's moved. And I see that Leafs PR tweet come up. He's always going to be a Leaf, and anything else is just hopefulness. But yeah, that would be, if they're ever going to make a move, it would probably be Kerfoot or someone else who's got salary going out the door to make the money work.
Yeah, I do think if they're going to make anything remotely big, Kerfoot would have to be out if it's on forward. If it's on D, then maybe it's a Justin Hall. I like how he's played, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying if they're thinking like, let's swing for the fences and use Nyes and Sandin to get Chychrun or something like that, maybe that's the kind of salary that comes out. But I don't really see that. I don't see the need for adding a Luke Shen type. Like, I just think that's useless. He's going to cost at least like a second round or something like that, and he doesn't really bring much. Like, he hits, good for him, but he's not really bringing much else. We have Connor Timmins as a seventh defenseman. Maybe they'd want to upgrade on that spot, but I feel like making an addition on defense, if it's not like a real top four level guy, like a Jake McCabe or something like that, it's not really going to move the needle much. So it's not worth paying any of our, decent prospects for.
Agreed. Something I keep coming back to is that last year, Keefe relied really heavily on that Muzzin-Brody pair against Tampa to kind of shut down the top line. And I feel like the only real defensive move that makes sense would be to add a player like that you can pair up with Brody and then use against the Kucherov line versus Tampa. But that would be the only move that really makes sense. And when you look at the list of guys that could fill that role and be effective in that role, it's not very long. And it kind of begins and ends with Jake McCabe, unless you're looking at Jarmo Kekalainen's deal with Gavrikov, who I'm not even convinced is the real deal. And you're thinking, oh, I'll pay that price. So it's kind of a tricky situation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think the whole Brody thing, like, we've just seen it too much. Morgan Riley is a different player when he's with TJ Brody. I think for all Morgan Riley's flaws, he's on the team anyways. He's not a bad player, and he plays his best with TJ Brody. So I think you don't use them as a shutdown pair. You just use them as a number one pair. You play them, 20 minutes at even strength on the night. And you just kind of got to ride with that and then have the, Sandin, Lily, Geo Hall, whatever you're going to do with the bottom. I agree. It would be nice to get another shutdown guy. And I'm not 100% going to rule out them bringing back Jake Muzzin. He's been around the team. I don't think it's going to happen. I kind of hope it doesn't happen, because I'd be a little bit cringy watching him being scared he's going to get hurt. But I don't know. Stranger things have happened. And if Muzzin looks at this team and he sees like the opportunity that he might have there, he might be tempted into coming back.
100%. I think you nailed it on the head there with saying that, of course, I want him to be able to go skate with. I think he's got a little boy. I'd want him to be able to coach his little boy one day and to throw him above his head and to be fine health-wise. But then at the same time, if the doctors clear him, if he feels that he's capable of coming back and he wants to come back, I would love nothing more than to be cheering for Jake Muzzin again, because that's a gamer, and we could always use Jake Muzzin on our team.
This is my little conspiracy theory that, you know, how, like you said, they paid those assets to get O'Reilly retained when they didn't totally need to. We think maybe because they want to add somebody else, but what I think is maybe they want to keep it at, you know, 2-3 million after the deadline, able to move that to 4 or 5. And then if you have one guy like who's got an injury like Matt Murray does, you know, there's always somebody injured, then maybe that allows the Leafs to bring Jake Muzzin back, you know, for 5-6 games before the season's over to get him acclimated again, get his legs under him. So that's my little conspiracy theory. If they don't make any more moves, if they don't use that cap space, I will be up to about, I don't know, 30% confident Jake Muzzin's coming back.
I remember last year we were all talking about, oh yeah, they have all this cap space because Jake Muzzin's an LTIR, and they didn't end up using it, and guess who came back for the playoffs? So you're not wrong in your theory. If they end up without making another move, you'd look pretty smart there.
And I think like it's different than Kucherov, right? You can have Kucherov come back off LTIR, play game one of the playoffs and look like an absolute stud. We've seen Jake Muzzin with some time off. I don't think it's going to look as pretty. So yeah, if he does come back, he's going to need some seasoning. I don't know if they could like get that up to snuff with the Marlies, if they'd be allowed to do that. I think they'd probably be able to get him 3 or 4 games, but it's not NHL speed, especially NHL playoff speed. So again, I'm not expecting it, but there's just a little part of me that like, it's kind of like the same part of my brain that's saying Kerfoot isn't going anywhere. It's just very Kyle Dubas-y, and he, you know, Muzzin played for the Sioux. He's here forever.
And you just, I keep going back to how great Muzzin was in some of our playoff runs when he was so good, and then he goes down with injury, and then the team kind of falls apart. I just have that hope that when I always envisioned them winning, it was Jake Muzzin's on the ice and he's producing and he's Jake Muzzin. So yeah, if that happened, like I'm with you, that'd be incredible.
Like if you can get, you know, 15 minutes out of him a night, 15 shutdown minutes, and he plays a little bit of penalty kill, like who knows, man. But he did say, like I heard somebody talking about an interview with him where he said like how he was kind of playing differently, like he wasn't taking the risks he would take and playing a little bit more soft. So again, if he's feeling any bit like scared to play, then I hope he doesn't force it just because the team's so freaking good. Now, before we go, there were a few more questions from some of the people on Twitter. Andrew Fletcher asked, what are the odds O'Reilly re-signs and what's the estimated contract if he does? What do you think? Do you think he's going to re-sign?
I think he's going to really consider it. I think he's made something like $60 million in his career.
77. I just looked yesterday.
Yeah, is it 77? So I'm not a millionaire, but I'm kind of looking at that as the difference between finishing your career with $77 million and 85 versus 80. Like, are you too upset about that? Maybe you take a million or two discount to stay with the Leafs, stay with your hometown team, kind of live close to your parents. Is that something you look at? I know they talked about Doug Armstrong, the St. Louis GM, sat down with Ryan O'Reilly and kind of offered him a few teams and then got the deal done with Dubas. Maybe that shows that he's interested in coming back. I'm not 100% sure what it would look like, because it could be anywhere between a couple million dollars and taking the Giordano discount. But Dubas said he hasn't looked at it. He's not thought about it. He's going to let Ryan O'Reilly kind of hang out a little bit. But I think it's something that they're definitely going to look to, especially if there's a little bit of playoff success.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's certainly something that's going to depend on how the rest of the season goes, how the fit is, if the Leafs, you know, make the cup finals, especially if he gets close but doesn't win it, like he's probably going to be chomping to come back. Hopefully he comes back because he wants to go back to back with the boys. But no, I definitely would give it a good chance. When I was looking at acquiring Timo Meier, just seeing how he would fit because of that whole thing with his $10 million qualifying offer, I figured out it was going to be extremely tough to keep Timo Meier at, you know, 8 or 9 million if you're re-signing Bunting and making moves like that. But Ryan O'Reilly, yeah, he's not going to take the Geo deal because he's only 32. Like, he's still, I think he could still hit the open market tomorrow and probably get a 3-year, $15 million or something like that, at least, I would think, five. But I'm thinking maybe they sign him to like a 4-year, $3 million or 4-year, $2.5 million, something like that, where he's taking a million or two less to stay. Because he is the perfect type of guy that people are kind of worried with Tavares, like aging. Like, is he the type of guy that could play a third line center role? You know, O'Reilly could do that. So if he does fall off, he doesn't need to be in the top six. So if he's making $3.5 million to be a great third line center for you, I can't see why you wouldn't do that. So I'm getting my hopes up a little bit on it, especially, like I said, that $77 million. It's exactly what you said. If he can earn an extra, you know, $5 or $6 million with another team to go play away from home on a team he's not as comfortable with, or maybe he goes back to St. Louis, but is that $6 million at the end of the day going to be the biggest deal when you already have probably 84, 85 by the time you're done? I don't really think so. So I'm getting my hopes up about it. All right, now two questions. One's from Bergerino. It says, if Dubas's contract expires, how quickly does another team give him a blank check? So I'll give you that one first. What do you think? Do you think Dubas is going to stay, or do you think he's going somewhere else?
I think he should stay no matter what. Losing the first round, winning the first round. I just think that this Leafs team, they went and made the playoffs one time in 11 years. And then as soon as this guy gets signed to the organization, they go like 6 of 7 years making the playoffs. And there's something to be argued that he's done such an incredible job. He's rebuilt this entire front office. So much of the Leafs is tied to him. Every single hire that's been made in the last 5 years has been at his hand. And so firing him means firing like 40 different people to rebuild the entire organization, which is such a lengthy process. You know, they keep coming back every year, top five in the league with him. I'd be hard pressed to find a better GM than him. And like, who's available, right? Like, if you're a good GM, you're probably signed with your team. You're not really like dying to leave. So,
no, I agree completely. I think even if we do lose in the first round, I'm with you. I'd re-sign him because look at the team he's assembled. If they can't win, that's on the players. That's on the coaching. That's not on the GM. At the end of the day, he can only build the roster, and he has built an insane roster. The other reason why is obviously he has a really good relationship with Austin Matthews. And if keeping Kyle Dubas means Austin Matthews, I don't care if he's Lou Lamoriello level GM. Sign him up, because I want that. Just looking at him, he doesn't make many mistakes. Obviously, I hated the Morgan Rielly contract, still do, but for every Morgan Rielly contract, there's a Bunting, Kampf, an O'Reilly deal. There's just the good far outweighs the bad with him. And yeah, like, even if you gave me from hired GMs right now, like, am I even sure I'm taking Steve Yzerman over him right now? Like, I don't know. The dude signed Ben Chiarot. He signed Andrew Kopp to a big deal. Like, Joe Sakic, again, great GM, but I'm not certain he's going to be better. So yeah, you got to stick with Dubas to me. And I think, to answer the initial question, yes, I think another team is not going to give him a blank check, but I don't think he's going to be out of work for long unless he really wants to be. Now, last one is from Wendell Maniac, and he says, do you agree that Dubas's replacement will win Executive of the Year for the next two seasons, even if that replacement happened to be a potato? So basically, this is just a joke on how Lou Lamoriello won Executive of the Year with basically the team that Garth Snow built. Or just GMs win it. Like Dubas will leave such a great team for this guy. The guy will make one move and then, you know, win GM of the year because the team finally decided to win. So I'll answer that one for myself. Yes, I think whoever got it next could very well look like an executive of the year thanks to Kyle Dubas.
I agree with you on that. Yeah, all these prospects coming out of nowhere. Kyle Dubas could never. This Ronnie Hrovin guy, he's incredible. This new executive is lighting the league on fire. What a guy.
Yeah, I think we would very quickly grow to regret it. I think he's got like, we've seen Holmberg come in. The prospects are starting to come. And Matt Nyes, he just scored two big goals in a playoff game yesterday. He's looking like a piss missile. Hopefully he comes into the equation on the fourth line near the playoff time. So yeah, I'm loving where we're at with Kyle Dubas. I'm loving where we're at with the team. I think if we lose in the first round, I don't even know if I would do it for sure, but I think Keefe would have to go before before Dubas, because he's the one in the room with the guys, and the guys that he's got in the room are insanely good. And with that said, that does it for this edition of the Buds All Day podcast. Thanks again, Noah, for coming on.
Hey, anytime. Take care, hey, guys.
And we will hope to see you guys soon. I can't make a guarantee of when it will be, but I'm sure before the playoffs, we'll definitely have something else out for you guys. Maybe some playoff post games are in the cards. We'll kind of figure it out as we go. But thanks for listening, and